FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Okay, welcome back to the Investigative Journal on this January 6th, 2015 day on our calendar. I'm your host, Greg Anthony. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, and you can catch my show every evening from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. That's on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Also, it's on Liberty Radio Live, as well as you can get it on First Amendment Radio at 11 a.m. to noon every day as well, and on several AM stations across the South, as well as some shortwave. Now, let's get down to what I wanted to speak about today. Yesterday I ran an old show about the Tony Alamo Ministry to refresh your memory about some of the things that have happened there. And I decided to take a peek at the specific raid that this church encountered when they wanted to arrest Tony Alamo on basically violations of the Mann Act. And I started to think about it and said, well, has there ever been any raids on Catholic churches in America in a similar fashion? And has there been any other raids on Christian fundamental churches in America? And let's kind of do an analysis and an analogy of how the sexual abuse allegations are treated differently within the Christian Bible reading community and how they're treated with the Catholic Church in America. Okay, I thought we'd look at that. What it shows to me is there's protection for the Catholic Church in America at an unprecedented level. And I will explain why. But first, let's look back at the Tony Alamo Ministry raid that took place in 2008. Well, this wasn't the first time they had raided his church, and he had a very successful ministry. He still does have a successful ministry with a number of churches across the country. And basically, a Bible-believing group who helped people, sent out literature for over 40 years regarding the Vatican's intrigues, both secularly and spiritually. And this kind of upset the apple cart, upset the flow of what Americans really believe about their government and their church. And for 40 years, they've tried to shut him down. They've raided his ministry a number of times. Well, this last one was done in SWAT team-like fashion. They had, prior to the raid, which was basically not geared at just arresting Tony Alamo. They could have found him. He was not even at the ministry they raided. But the raid showed that they wanted to dismantle this ministry. They wanted to put in custody children and take them away from their parents, which they've successfully done. Over 35 to 40 children still are not in the custody of their parents. They've been put in the custody of the estate. And I've showed you the deplorable conditions that exist for these poor kids. And I'm not talking about financially, because they were wined and dined by the feds so they could find as few people to testify against Tony. And the coercion there is unprecedented, and we've discussed his trial. But this raid made absolutely no sense. But the reason it makes sense to the powers that be is it gets a lot of publicity on the press. They notified, prior to the raid, over 150 news outlets, including all the big ones. So that once this raid took place, it was the next day, or even the same day, it was splashed all over national news. And this man was convicted in the eyes of the public even before he had a chance. Now, the raid took place at an Falk, Arkansas. And over 30 to 40 or maybe more SWAT team members came with their black uniforms and their guns. I mean, you're talking about these high-powered weapons, you know, with scopes on them and the infrared and the whole shot. And what they found was this. about six or seven young kids enjoying themselves playing on the swings. A ministry that was preparing for a service and also preparing meals to help people. And what they did is they made it look as if this was a cult, as if they were doing something wrong there. And that raid is significant because this is what they do. So then once the raid, it's depicted on the media as really what nothing. I mean, here you've got 250-pound guys coming in and then taking into custody little girls and boys, 7 and 8 years old, crying. I mean, terrified to death. And then, basically, once these six or seven children were taken into custody, the judge the next day in Fauk, Arkansas, put out an order that there is an APB on all the kids involved in the Tony Alamo ministry, and to hunt them all down and get them into state custody. And what this did was that put the fear of God into the parents who didn't want to lose their children a way to dissemble and to wipe out this ministry. Well, they did finally arrest Tony. He was not even close to Fauk, Arkansas. He was on a speaking tour, I believe, and finally that happened. So then the trial comes down. So this raid was really overblown. It was not depicted the way it should have been in the press. And since then, there have been so many lies and so many things done that I can't make any other conclusion other than the fact that they did not want him to continue sending out literature and talking on shortwave radio to millions of people about the facts regarding the Vatican and the coercion involving our government, etc. And so I decided to look at this, and I Googled, and then I also researched, and I've been doing this for a long time, and I've never seen a raid on a Catholic church or a priest charged with sexual abuse like the manner they've done at Tony Alamo. And then I'm going to show you some other Christian ministries that have received the same treatment. But here in America, it seems like everything, you know, they go in and they arrest the priest quietly and then send him off to a rehabilitation center run by the Catholic Church and the government. So we have a different set of standards here. And there have been way, way more serious sexual abuse charges against the Vatican and the Catholic Church in this country, as well as around the world, than any of these Christian ministries. In fact, I believe they frame them so that the heat gets taken off the Vatican and the Vatican looks like the good guys, to say it in kind of a simple way. Now, listen. For example, let's take Cardinal Spellman, an old, considered, this was, he's no longer with us on this earth. However, Spellman was the chaplain to the American Armed Forces. They called the Vietnam War Spelly's War. He was considered one of the most powerful men in America. He was the cardinal in New York. And he was also the suspect of many, many child abuse charges that were always hushed up and protected by the New York police, the feds, etc. So at the higher levels, they get the protection. Now let's go down to the diocese of the Catholic Church, the lower level priests who are pedophiles, etc. When something like that happens, originally the hierarchy of the church and the government was covering this up, allowing the Vatican to do their own internal investigations, which you know what happens there. Now, the certain priests that have been arrested in America have been done in a quiet manner. I've never seen a school torn down. I've never seen classes interrupted, children taken into state custody, parents still wondering where they're, you know, not being able to communicate with their children because of going to a Catholic school. In fact, people are encouraged to get a parochial education, a Catholic education in this country, despite what's going on with all these thousands of pedophile charges in the U.S., not counting in Europe or in other parts of the world. So let's look at some of the other parts of the world. Now, for example, in Belgium, in 2010, they got it right, maybe, and perhaps our American lawmakers and our SWAT teams ought to take a look at what they did there. If you like going in and, you know, showing off your armor to kids playing on a swing at a Christian church, why don't you go into these big Catholic churches in America? And I believe it's because they're protected. Now, in Belgium in 2010, police raided the headquarters of a Roman Catholic church and the home of a recently retired cardinal in Belgium as part of an investigation into the sexual abuse of children by the clergy. That's in small country of Belgium. I mean, this is going on in most every country that I've ever heard in Europe. I mean, Ireland, France, England. On Thursday morning, this was in June of 2010, 30 police officers swooped on the palace of the Archbishop of Brussels, sealing off buildings and removing documents. Now, they also were talking about porn and computers, and they did take the computers. Now, when they... Some of the stuff that went on with the Tony Alamo ministry is they spread this news that there might be porn at the Tony Alamo ministry. But you know what? They never even bothered taking a computer or anything else. So that wasn't even on the table. And they knew there was nothing there. They didn't even bother to take computers, but they told the media that so people in the country would already convict this guy before he even had a chance for a trial. And that was like worse than a kangaroo court when that took place. Now, they seal off the buildings, remove the documents in Belgium, and this is the latest blow to the scandal hit Roman Catholic Church, disrupted a meeting of bishops taking place in the presence of the Vatican's ambassador to Belgium. I mean, they got ambassador. I mean, what are you talking about here? A second raid took place at the nearby home of Cardinal Godfrey Daniels, 77, where police officers seized a personal computer belonging to the former head of Belgium's Catholic Church. A third raid took place in the city of Leuven, where police officers searched the office of another group, a Catholic group, an independent body set up by the church. They set up by the church to collect and investigate abuse allegations. Over 450 files detailing abuse allegations were confiscated. These were allegations that never got into the hands of the authorities. Now, Jean-Marc Melu, a spokesman for the Brussels Crown Prosecutor's Office, said that the raids were related to the sexual abuse of children within the church. It's a recent dossier, the prosecutor was informed, of charges denouncing the abuse of minors by a certain number of church people, he said. A spokesman for Cardinal Daniels said the police did not interrogate him during the raid. They did take away his computer, he said. The cardinal believes justice must run its normal course. He has nothing against that. The investigation is thought to center on April's resignation of Roger Vanhulli, Bishop of Bruges. Another bishop stood down after admitting to have sexually abused a young boy during the time when Cardinal Daniels was the head of the Belgian church. Belgium's church has been hit hard by a sex abuse scandal that has engulfed the wider European Roman Catholic clergy, with reports that bishops covered up abuse of in the seminar, schools, and other church-run institutions. Well, we know that they've been covering this up in most every country that we can think of. Now, it even got to the point where the Pope, when he ran the office of the Inquisition, prior to being a Pope, he had sent out documents encouraging bishops not to tell the authorities and to handle these abuse allegations internally. Basically, it's an obstruction of justice. But nothing has ever been done, and nothing has been done in this country. I can't find a raid in this country, except if you start looking for Christian fundamental churches. Now, we know the extent to the Vatican pedophile rings and sexual abuse charges is only the tip of the iceberg so far. But let's look, you know, we know about the Tony Alamo raid. Don't we? Okay. So, the same analogy here. Why in Belgium do they do this, but not in America? When there's more, probably, we have more Catholic churches. It's the large, and we have more dioceses, Catholic churches. We know. I mean, they won't even investigate claims of murder and burying little babies under the altar at these mission schools that were run to basically genocide the American Indians, run by the Jesuits and the American government. It was the American government's blessings. They won't even investigate murder charges against this church. So imagine if you have a child that's been sexually abused in a Catholic school. I'm telling you what, there's a double standard going on here, and this document I found will prove it. It says, not besides the Tony Alamo ministry, I just want to say that, Texas has the distinction of being home to two of the most dramatic government raids on religious communities in recent U.S. history. The deadly federal raid on the Branch Davidians, of course we know outside of Waco in 1993, stands as the most memorable law enforcement debacle in modern times, resulting in the deaths of 86 people and the destruction of an entire religious community. 15 years later, the Texas state raid on the fundamentalist church of the Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in El Dorado led to an unprecedented mass custodial detention of 439 children by child protection officials. Fortunately, the latter raid produced no shootings or deaths. But the state's massive roundup of FLDS children carved out its own unique place in the annals of American history. It's a peculiar distinction for a state that promotes an image of rugged independence and less government, doesn't it? It appears that the fear and loathing of unconventional religious communities trumps other core cultural values in the Lone Star State. Now, let's say, folks, not only in the Lone Star State, we can add Arkansas and a number of other places. And what this says is basically this. The government works for the Vatican, and anybody that speaks against them or prevent, you know, causes a threat to their power will be treated this way. But the Vatican is treated a different way. The churches in America are treated a different way, aren't they? Now, but Texas is not alone, folks, like I said. Government's raid on minority communities have become more commonplace in North America and Europe over the last 25 years, and the facts bear that out. And that includes the Alamo ministry. Can't we analyze the latest conflicts for a number of reasons? First, the FLDS has been the target of state raids in the past. Just like the Tony Alamo ministry has been targeted since the 80s, another F.L.D. church, prominently in 1953 in Arizona, this group, history, invites a comparative analysis, not simply with embattled groups, but the previous raids on its own community. Second, in 2008, a state raid was launched on a fraudulent complaint by a mentally disturbed woman who claimed she was abused by her F.L.D.S. spiritual husband. Now, this is the same thing that went on in the Alamo ministry. The extent to which state investigators failed to corroborate the veracity of the caller's claims before mobilized a massive raid to lay siege to the yearning for Zion Ranch begs explanation, as well as begs explanation of what went on over in Falk, Arkansas. Same kind of scenario. Third, the state's decision to take into custody more than 400 children, just like they did at the Alamo ministry, was an extreme measure by any legal standards. The ill-advised action was later overruled by the Texas court and the Texas Supreme Court. Now, in Arkansas, there's been a different view, hasn't there? Now, you see the similarities here. And what I'm saying is, why doesn't this occur when there's, you know, how many priests, if you go to, I think it's Bishop's Hotline or something, and it'll show you the extent of this pedophile problem in the church. Why don't they ever try to close down one of them? Now, if I'm missing something here and you know of something, let me know. The explanations by child protection officials, in this case in Texas, were later found to be based on exaggerations of threatened children, just like they were in the Alamo ministry. Except in the Alamo ministry, these 35 to 40 kids still haven't been brought back to their parents. And finally, in reconstructing the events and circumstances leading up to this raid, it's troubling by decisions and actions of the state that targeted this minority group for differential treatment. However, at the same time, what kind of protection have we been given the minority group of homosexuals in this country? They get unprecedented. You can't say a word that's not, you know, politically correct. They're protected, given rights far over and above any Christian community. Not surprisingly. Now, for example, they can marry each other legally. Now, where in the Bible does it say that? I mean, have we basically forgotten about God's law? But not surprisingly, we found there was much more to the Texas raid than one could determine from simply reading the press releases by the Department of Family and Protective Services or listening to the nightly news coverage. And I found that to be the case 10 times fold in the Tony Alamo story. So the same thing's going on in other Christian communities, whether you like the LD, you know, the Church of Latter-day Saints, or whether you like the Alamo ministry, or whether you like the Catholic Church, is irrelevant. Equal protection under the law is supposed to be relevant. But as you can see here, certain people get certain protection and favors, and it usually is anybody related to the Catholic Church. Now, one other thing, when this happens, folks, your rights have been taken away. There is no First Amendment. There is no freedom of religion in this country. And I say there is. There, you have freedom of religion as long as you don't criticize the Vatican or any of its, you know, devious deceptions they've caused throughout the centuries. Now, these people in the Alamo ministry, I'm very grateful that they came and spoke out to me so I could get this story out, and still do it all the time. And I'm very grateful to them for opening up their hearts, opening up their information to me so I could get this information out to you. Because their story was never told, just like it was never told in this case. And the information that's coming from these FLDS representatives also is important, because it's telling us what went on there, and you can see a similarity. Now, this raid on this minority religious group faced a barrage of unfavorable media, public criticism, official condemnations in the days and weeks following the raid, just like the Tony Alamo ministry faced. So, there's a number of people that came forward to tell you about what happened. And to talk about what was going on at those churches, as well as, you know, countering that with the information you have from the government. The chief executive officer of the Hill Country Community Mental Health and Mental Retardation Center in Kerrville, Texas, Linda Worlin, was instrumental in explaining how Texas child protection officials adopted an anti-cult framing of this FLDS church that inflated and exaggerated the child abuse claims. Now, I'm convinced the same thing occurred in the Alamo ministry. Now, Mrs. Worlin and her staff were asked by the Department of Family and Protective Services to assist in the counseling of FLDS children taken into state custody after the raid. Now, this is exactly what happened in Falk, Arkansas, with a different group. And, my God, if you see how they try basically coerce these people to get what they wanted, it's incredible. They found, however, that the chains of fire were unfounded, just like many, many psychologists and people working on the Alamo case found there was no child abuse, but yet they still are in custody. Explain that. Now, Worlin said that the abuse claims were linked to cult experts consulting with the authorities, and their efforts to challenge the experts were rebuffed. Worlin's observations about these children in Texas and the nature of the evidence during the temporary period of state custody were discerning and perceptive. And she was willing to state that the state exaggerated and even coerced these people, these children. Now, trying to put this together, you wonder, in the back of my mind, I'm wondering what this is all, how this meshes or works together with what's going on in the Catholic churches and the abuse there, and how it's treated completely different. Now, let's look at a rate here of the Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, like I said, you don't have to agree with their principles. For example, we don't seem to have a problem with men marrying men anymore, or women marrying women. But in this sect, they called it a sect, let's look at it. Like I said, it's not important. Well, it certainly is important to the authorities because they seem to single out. I wonder if a homosexual church would be formed and they continued to get married and they had, you know, would they raid them? Because would they call that a sect? Because men are marrying men, women are marrying women. It doesn't seem normal to me. But it's not only normal in our world now, it is recognized legally. So, like I said, it seems that they pinpoint certain things in the Christian world where people interpret the Bible or have done things that they don't particularly like. And I think it all boils down to creating this climate that if you're not involved with the Kumbaya ecumenical Catholic movement in the Protestant churches as well as the Vatican, then you're going to be targeted. And especially you're going to be targeted if you criticize them. And that's what happened in the Alamo case. Now, we ran over 2 minutes. We're going to take a break and come right back.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net. The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on internet or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening. Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, we're back for the second half hour of the Investigative Journal. I did want to mention that I went over 2 minutes on my last segment, and I got so involved that I didn't look at the clock. So if I missed a few things, I apologize. But we're going to pick up and kind of talk about this raid that occurred on a religious minority group in Texas. And we were analyzing how the Vatican seems to get a free ride, and also we are comparing this to, you know, others that have been, you know, Waco, Tony Alamo Ministry, etc., showing you that there's a double standard here, and that the Vatican or the Catholic Church seems to get protection, even though the widespread allegations of sexual abuse far outnumber what's going on at a number of these ministries. In fact, if you look at the Tony Alamo ministry, I've shown you how they've infiltrated that ministry, the authorities, with an idea of bringing him down and trying to set him up like they did in Waco. Now, on April 3rd in 2008, Texas State Police and the Department of Family and Protective Services raided the Yearning for Zion Ranch near El Dorado, Texas, a community of 800 members of Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, it's a Mormon group that continues to practice polygamy. State officials claimed they had evidence of a widespread pattern and practice of child sexual abuse and underage marriage. The massive state raid was triggered by phone calls to the Newbridge Family Shelter Hotline in San Angelo, Texas. And I'm getting a phone call here. And what I'm going to do is take that call. No, I'm not. I'm going to let it ring, and then I will call the person back and continue on with what I'm doing here. I was going to stop the show and then start over again, but I won't do that. Okay, so it's a group there. They're triggering. Now they are targeting these people. And Now, the hotline from San Angelo, Texas, said they received a call from an alleged 16-year-old girl inside the FLDS community who said she was raped and beaten by her 49-year-old spiritual husband. The young girl identified herself as Sarah Jessup and claimed to be the seventh wife of a man she identified as Dale Barlow. According to the court documents, she told authorities that her husband choked her, hit her in the chest, forced himself on her sexually. One of the beatings was so severe that it left her with broken ribs, and she claimed that she had to be taken to the hospital. Sarah said she was forced to marry this guy at 15. Okay? 4 days after the initial call was made to the domestic violence shelter, Texas raid was launched to rescue Sarah, arrest Barlow, and garner evidence of child abuse. Now, against the FLDS leaders. Following an extensive 2-day search for the Yearning Zion Ranch, however, they were unable to find the young girl anywhere on the property. Despite not finding the purported victim or alleged perpetrator, child protective authorities took 439 children into state custody, and a grand jury indicted 12 FLDS men on charges of sexual assault of a minor. It was the largest state custodial detention of children in U.S. history. Now, the FLDS children were at risk, so they were, then this action was, their action of taking these 435 kids was basically supported by that. Now, Texas state officials later learned that the caller was not Sarah Jessup, as she claimed, but a mentally disturbed 33-year-old woman from Colorado Springs, Rosita Swinton. Ms. Swinton had been arrested previously for making false charges of abuse to the police. Now, at that particular juncture, shouldn't they have released the 435 kids? Now, in February 2008, Ms. Swinton called Colorado Springs police and claimed she was a young girl being held in a basement. She was later arrested on making false charges and released on $20,000 bail from El Paso County Jail. Documents related to Swinton's arrest link her to phone calls to the police by Adana Anderson in October 2007. The caller claimed to be a young woman abused at the Colorado Springs New Life Church. In another call, Swinton claimed to be the 13-year-old student at a Liberty High School who said she was being drugged and sexually abused by her father. 2 years later, Swinton had been called to authorities in Castle Rock, Colorado, saying that she was a 16-year-old girl named Jessica who had just given birth to a boy named Jacob. She told police she had been molested by a family member and feared going home. Now, Castle Rock police say Swinton led them on a 3-day wild goose chase, and Ms. Swinton has been linked to 10 incidents of false claims. The raid on the FLDS by Texas State Protection officials predicted both on Swinton's calls was predicated on Swinton's calls, which were erroneous, and place FLDS Now, Jessup is the founder of the Help of Child. Now, Flora Jessup began. She's an supposedly anti-cult movement activist. And she started an agency that provides assistance to women who are in these kind of ridiculous relationships, they say. Now, what we're seeing here is that Dale Barlow, the man accused of abusing her, had never been on the yearning for Zion Ranch. Not only did state authorities fail to corroborate the authority of Swinton's calls, but the manner in which they arrived at identifying Dale Barlow as the abusive husband was equally questionable. Initially, Ms. Swinton did not give Barlow's first name in the calls to the domestic violence hotline. And as we go on, we see that a lot of this erroneous information was not even investigated, and the main goal was to raid these ministries. So we have then another case here, which reminded me of some, you know, of the Waco case and other ministries, some that not, you know, have contacted me throughout the years that have not ever had an opportunity to tell their story. And it appears that what we need to look at is how they constantly talk about these people being cults. Now, of course, minority people, people within a minority, sometimes have different views about life. But that's, you know, isn't America, isn't that what we're supposed to be here? No one basically is the same, and our Constitution is supposed to protect. Now, it's also supposed to have an authority figures that research, you know, that actually do investigate things. And basically, everyone should be protected under the law equally. But you can see in these cases that so much is left suspect. And this case goes on talking about how the evidence used to establish this raid was not at all truthful. So it's another reminder of what goes on behind the scenes. And what I always said, and we're going to get back, I could go on and on with the evidence that was conflicting in the trial and etc. But the damage had already been done, hadn't it? The raid had taken place. The public view had already been carved out based on erroneous information. Now, I believe that when you have allegations of sexual abuse in Catholic situations, let's say at St. Mary's grade school, where the priests live in the rectory, the kids come to school, it's handled in a much different manner, very quietly, internally. Kids are allowed to continue going to school. They're not claimed to be at risk at all. They go home, and then the parents hear that maybe there are some problems with Father O'Malley, and life goes on. In the case of these Christian ministries that are considered, and I use the word in quotes, cults, the authorities raid them, take innocent children into custody with the intent of disrupting the whole ministry and then taking their property, of course. Now, in the Alamo ministry, some of the differences that stand out to me, which are even more troubling, is that he was an outspoken critic of the Vatican for over 40 years. And they had to shut him up. And they tried for years. And I've went over the persecutions that they put on this guy and his ministry over the years. And finally, at this particular juncture, he's sitting in jail for 175 years on what I consider to be fraudulent, you know, trumped up charges based on erroneous information and lies. And it's an effort to protect the Vatican's public image, because he was reaching millions of people across the world, you know, all over the world. And the thing, though, hasn't really worked. I think at the present time, they have also filed civil cases, and they've gotten judgments of over $500 million to try to now take away their property. Not only the children, but the ministry continues, and they're reaching over 310,000 to 15,000 people a week with this literature, talking about not only the raid and what happened to Tony, but all the information that they've tried to pass on through the years, collected by them from researchers all over the world that have understood the Vatican involvement and the corruption within that organization. And that, to me, singles out this guy a little bit. Reminds me of Tupper Saucy, who wrote a book called Rulers of Evil, who was also targeted by them for his outspokenness, and actually presented some information that the prosecutor in his IRS charges was actually a Jesuit priest. So, we have a lot to talk about when it comes to this kind of what I consider to be a singling out of the groups who basically, one, like in the Alamo case, talk and spread information that's detrimental to the public image of the Vatican and so forth. And then what they like to do is single out some of these minority religious groups like Waco, like the FLDS Church and others. And there's so much more to research on those guys. You know, we know about the infiltration at Waco, but I'm sure it goes on a lot more than we think at a lot of these churches. Now, we know for a fact that most every Protestant church in America today is aligned with the Vatican. And this is a long history of infiltrating different churches, starting up religious organizations that are basically sympathetic to the Vatican view, but seem different. seem like they are Christian Bible-believing people, but really there's something more going on. And that infiltration is a subject that I've dealt with on this show for a number of years now, and find it to be quite troubling because you don't know who's who or what's what, but you can try to point out the differences between the Vatican traditions and also Christian Bible-believing stances on following the Word of God. And there's so much difference between the two. And the big one is that, really, if the Bible is followed, the Vatican is X'd out of the game here. You don't need to go to a priest. You don't need to pay indulgences. You don't need to have pomp in St. Peter's Square for you to have a relationship with God. And that's what they want to protect. And they protect it for a couple of reasons. I don't think they protect it because of their strong belief system. They protect it because it's a good front. Jesus and their whole system of idolizing statues and all that stuff is a good front to make a lot of money and to have much relation, you know, strong relationships with countries. Now, the Vatican wouldn't have carved out its own city-state and being recognized around the world not only as a religious organization, but as a country, unless they had that in mind. And if you look at the over 200 concordats, and now a concordat is a legal agreement between a country and the Vatican, and basically what it boils down to is they get in cahoots with the government officials, whether they are dictators or Democrats, they do not care. They will support a dictatorship in one part of the world while they denounce it in this part of the world. That is their MO. That's why they were involved with Hitler. That's why they were involved with Stalin. That's why they're involved with Roosevelt and Churchill, and go on and on and on. Mussolini, the rest of the Catholic dictators in Europe during that period of time. And in fact, the Jesuits have gone on the record to say that the Vatican's government of choice is fascism, if a push comes to shove. So what do they have here in America? We have a democracy, supposedly a republic, built on freedoms that are only there as a show. They're there basically to protect the fascist sentiments of the people in control in our country who would most likely prefer fascism to a republic or a democracy. Because they have more control. But in this country, they do it in such a deceitful way. They present you all of these things that look like you have freedom, when in fact, behind the scenes, you have very little. And when you mix the Vatican up with all this political stuff, and you understand how they operate with these concordats, then you understand what Tony Alamo and others have said regarding the beast. Now, one of the things interesting about the American situation is that after Lincoln was killed, we knew that they were involved in it. Our leaders knew, and we had cut off diplomatic relationships, which should have been cut off for the remainder of time, shouldn't it? But when good old Ronnie Reagan came in, we began our outward forgiveness of the Vatican, so to speak. They didn't even mention this, though. They're never related in our history books to the killing of Lincoln. They're protected. Although the facts show they were involved up to their necks. And many, many high leaders in government, many people in America understood that. And when you look at the conspiracy, it wasn't just a lone gunman. Similar to Lee Harvey Oswald, it wasn't a lone gunman who killed Lincoln. So they cut off diplomatic relationships because of their involvement in getting rid of Abraham Lincoln. But Reagan comes in and we again open up diplomatic relationships. You know, now they have an ambassador in Washington, etc. We don't have exactly a written concordat like we do in other countries. We can't do that here. Because even when this happened with Reagan, certain Jewish communities and other Christian communities filed lawsuits that the Vatican's getting protection that no other religious organization gets in this country and recognition, and that's not right. Well, the courts overthrew that, and so basically, instead of a written document, like they still have in Germany that they signed with Hitler, a concordat, that's still in effect there, where they receive much money from that government and the people's pocketbooks. Here it's kind of what it's called is diplomatic relations are opened up, which means the same thing, but it's just not on paper, so it can be basically defeated by, I mean, if you got it written down, it's definitely a violation of church and state here, and they can't do that, so they got to figure a way around it. And that's what they did. So, but you got the same thing going on that you had with this country and the Vatican prior to Lincoln's assassination. And it's only a matter of time before, you know, people will accept the fact that the Pope has a lot to say with our government, and the Catholic Church has a lot to do with what goes on here. And that's only shown, I mean, right now, every year, the presidential dinner over at the big hotel in New York, the Waldorf Astoria, I believe, every year, every 4 years, there's a big, huge dinner before the election. And guess what? The big cardinal sits in the middle, and on one side you have the president, and then you have the challenger on the other side. And that is pretty significant to me, because why would you want, you know, is it a showing that the Vatican is in charge? Yeah, when you understand this stuff. Now, most people look at it and go, oh, it's just that they're a big church and they want to, you know, he wants to wish and say grace and give God's blessing on these candidates. And I tell you, nothing could be farther than the truth. And when you start looking at the connections and what they get in return, well, why wouldn't the politicians in this country want to align themselves with the richest organization in the world? Why wouldn't they want to align themselves with an organization that knows how to overthrow governments, that knows how to infiltrate, that has done this for centuries, that can give you advice on how to orchestrate wars, that can give you advice on, oh, what we did in the French Revolution and what we can do now to instigate places like Ferguson and other. Oh, why not? You're dealing with the most authoritative group of deceivers in the world. And why wouldn't our government want to get in bed with that? I mean, think about it. Very wealthy, very knowledgeable in deceit, and they have a history of control. Just what the doctor ordered for our great American leaders who are coming up today. And most of our diplomats, let's face it, are trained in Georgetown University, a Jesuit university, right next to the Vatican, at the School of Foreign Service, set up by Father Edmund Walsh, Jesuit priest, back during the time of Eisenhower and prior to that, where their idea was to train people in the Jesuit way that run our country all around the world. And Walsh was not only an educator, but he was basically a spy, working for the American government that brokered a deal between Stalin and Lenin with American money and Western money that was instrumental in certain things that were going on in Baghdad, that was in Japan, that was in all over the world. Basically, a spying Jesuit. Now, when he's depicted at the websites in Georgetown, he's depicted as this great educator. Go to Ike's website. Go to Eisenhower's website. There's a page dedicated to this man when he died, and it's still there. And I asked myself, if he was just a simple educator, why the heck is he on a presidential website? I don't see any other great educators there. He's there because...
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed. It has been purchased. It has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessing.